thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we experience life and spirituality. And I've got a special treat for you today, even though I know that we've been listening to that wonderful workshop by Ken Wapnick. So that was a special treat too. But today I have author Susan Dugan with me. And Susan and I have not been together for many months because of a number of things, including my move. So I'm thrilled to have Susan back on the show today. Now, Susan, many of you know her. She is a Course in Miracles teacher and the author of multiple articles and books based on forgiveness and living A Course in Miracles. She also has a weekly, just session with a number of people. And pre-COVID, that was a live session. People gathered at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center. But because of COVID, I think maybe some really good things came out of that because Susan took it online and now a number of people can join via phone, or I'll let Susan talk about that, but via phone or Zoom or however, lots of people can now be involved in that discussion group and they don't have to be there in person. So I will let Susan talk about that. But that's one of the things that Susan does too. Now, the basis of our discussion today is a concept that kind of jumped out at me when I was reading something of Ken Wapnick's this week. And it's called inner fragility. You know, the fact that we feel vulnerable, we feel fragile, and that is something that we all feel, especially when we're attached to our egos. Now, why Ken was talking about this, or this whole concept, he was talking about the obstacles to peace, and specifically the first obstacle to peace. So if you want to look at where we're going to talk about, this is where we're going to go. We're going to go to the textbook, chapter 19. We're going to go to section 4, part A, the first obstacle, the desire to get rid of it. And then we're going to jump to paragraphs 7 through 9. So if you want to read along with us, you can. You don't have to. This is just going to be a discussion that goes where it goes. So welcome, Susan, and thank you so much for joining me today and for being willing to talk about this.
Thank you, C.A. It is nice to be back doing a discussion with you, and as always, so, it's been too long.
Yeah, always. Always, it really has been.
Even because of in-person social distancing. So.
Right. But, you know, because I was talking about your discussion group, do you want to go ahead and give people information on that? That
sure.
If they are interested in joining, how they can do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a really huge group. It's although it's grown quite a bit, and you know, it's really for. I would say also that it's really not for beginners.
Okay.
to the course, because we do take on, you know, it's very grounded in Ken Wapnick's work, and tends to be, you know, people that have been at this for a while and have some, you know, basic understanding of the metaphysics of the course, and especially some familiarity with Ken's work. I think it would be hard to walk in as a, you know, beginning student. But although I may be doing at some point some introductory classes online, I'm hoping later, like maybe in the fall, to do some workshops online. But so this class, it evolved from my Tuesday, it's a Tuesday night Zoom class now, and it evolved from many years I taught at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center on Tuesday nights. It was just really part of my practice of learning myself, learning and you know, integrating my own forgiveness practice and you know, deepening understanding of the text and the workbook and all of the materials. So when COVID hit, we did go online, and for the last few months, we've switched from Skype to Zoom. But the nice thing about it has been a couple things that you know, it's grown in size, but particularly it's grown with students, again, that are very, you know, dedicated to really opening to this teaching. And it's a difficult teaching, you know, mm-hmm. To learn and to certainly to try to live. And so, and it's been nice that, you know, people were not locally limited. So it's been people from, you know, a lot of different states, and you know, someone from Canada, someone from Australia joined us, So that's, you know, that's very nice, and one way that technology can really be used in a very healing way. So that's been, it's kept me very much on task in my forgiveness practice, and also just, you know, it's been a real rewarding experience to be involved with. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you want to tell people how they can contact you?
I'm not really looking to expand it a whole lot, but if someone is really, you know, it fits those criteria that I was mentioning, and is interested, they can email me, and they can go to my website to do that, and forays in forgiveness.com, there's a contact area there, so if they wanted to email me through my website, that would be the best way to reach me. And you know, we can talk about what their experience is and whether it would be a good fit for them.
Okay, that sounds good. And I know that because I followed, you know, I have actually attended some of those in person several years ago, and I follow your weekly notes about what you're doing. I know you've gone completely through the textbook. So I can imagine that when you say this group now is a pretty dedicated group that has been with it for a while, I understand that.
Right. And yeah. Most of them, again, you know, really have been at this for a while, and, you know, at least are familiar with, again, you kind of almost need some introductory classes before you just jump into an ongoing class like this, I think, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
If people have questions about books or materials of Ken Wapnick that would be, you know, good introductions for them, I would be happy as well to to steer them in that direction, because there are some materials and possibly even some classes that might help them.
Right. Okay, that's good. And of course, both you and I always refer people to the Foundation for A Course in mm-hmm. Miracles,
exactly.
Which is www.facim.org, because they have an online bookstore, they have all kinds of online materials, but, you know, if it's out there, you can find it at the Foundation, basically, and
yes.
especially anything related to Ken Wapnick, who,
yes.
in my mind, is really one of the foremost teachers of A Course in Miracles.
Right, I would say the.
Yeah.
You know, because he really, you know, he was with the Course almost from the beginning.
Yeah.
From its very, you know, earliest, one of the first people to actually read it, and you know, knew Helen very and Bill well, and helped help, you know, it was instrumental in the editing of the Course, and really made it his life's work to teach it. And he had a not only a remarkable gift for teaching, but also, you know, really was someone who was very spiritually advanced, to say the least. And you know, I'm just so grateful that we have his work. I don't think that I would be able to understand this at all without Ken Wapnick.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I have told people before, what's kind of ironic to me is when I first started the Course, because of my spiritual background of I was Catholic and then had gone through a number of different disciplines, I didn't want anybody telling me what it said. And so even though friends of mine said, well, if you're going to do the Course, you really ought to check into Ken Wapnick, I'm going, nope, I got to do this myself. I have to read it for myself. And I did watch like one video of Ken's, and quite frankly, I just couldn't get into it. But then I read the entire Course. And so a year later, after I'd read the entire Course, I went back and started listening to Ken. And I was all of a sudden, oh my God, this guy's brilliant. And,
right.
you know, and it really was as if I could understand him. But the other factor that came in there, of course, is that Ken also had come to Denver, Colorado, and he had done a weekend workshop. And so after I met him in person and after I had listened to him, you know, I think I just had a better handle on his personality and his sense of humor.
Yes.
And so then when I'm listening to workshops or watching videos, somehow I was able more to figure out what was going on. Just understanding, like I said, his sense of humor.
Right.
You know, he could be so incredibly deadpan, or he could just be so, you know, he'd just say something and almost like with a little smirk, you know.
And, he had a very, very, very great sense of humor. And,
yes.
And really, in person, as you say, you know, just this delightful, lighthearted quality to him, which really mm-hmm. doesn't always come across when you're listening to, to him on audio or something. But I think it comes across more in the questions and answers that he does.
Yes.
Where he really gets kind of playful with people.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So in any case, now I just can't get enough of those workshops. And in fact, we have listened to one of his workshops, the one called, Living in the World, Prison or Classroom. Mm. And it, because even though I only play excerpts on the show, it took 11 shows to cover cover the material of that workshop. And quite frankly, I'm ready to turn around and just do it again, because that, like, cumulatively has really become one of my favorite workshops. I just thought it was phenomenal. And there again, the question and answers. And I even, you know, had told people during the course of, you know, putting those excerpts together, several times I was cutting out the questions and answers because I found the people irritating me. You know? And I'm like, what is she talking about? Do we have to listen to this again? And I went, okay, here's your learning experience, CA, that right. you can't even listen to somebody asking a question.
Right.
You know, and I thought, whoa, you know, talking about living in the world, prison or classroom, that was such an eye-opener for me of how I was, as an editor, trying to get rid of some of those people talking that I just didn't want to hear them talking, you know?
Right.
And so it was actually kind of funny. But that workshop, oh, man, I just really, really loved it. I'm sorry to see that we ended it, and I will find something else. But by the way, anybody who did not hear that workshop, you can purchase the recording of it at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, or you can go back to the archives on 12radio.com into the on-demand section, and you can hear the shows that used excerpts of that particular workshop. I would encourage you to go to the Foundation, though, because that's the way you're going to find it for yourself and get the entire thing. But it was a really incredible workshop. And yeah, so for Ken, it's like there's never enough Ken. And that's why this show really is devoted to A Course in Miracles and to Ken's work with the Course. I mean, that's why you're going to hear me do that, because, you know, I don't need to steer clear of that. You know, there's more than enough material there to go through.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, there's so much material, and you know, he did so many workshops, and I can't even tell you how many books he has.
Right.
But there's, and very much like the course materials, the original materials themselves, every time you return to them, you know, I have quite a collection of his workshops that I've accumulated over the years, although certainly nowhere near the whole thing. But every time I go back to one of them, I'm, just like the course itself, I have a much, a much different, I hear something deeper and, you know, things jump out at me that are still, just like the course itself, it meets you where you are on your journey. And as we very incrementally, it seems at times, begin to rise up the ladder that, you know, back to the mind, and, you know, make our way back up to healing our perception through this forgiveness practice, we're able to hear more and more of what the Course is saying that's helpful to us wherever we are on our journey. So even if you're a beginner, you know, there are things that will reach you. Even if you're someone who's really been at this a long time, you know, there's still things that will reach you and be perfect for your, you know, where you are right now in your journey home.
Yes. Well, and exactly, Journey Home is the book that I've been reviewing recently of Kent's. And
right.
It's one of my favorites. I've read it a couple of times, and I just pulled it off the shelf, and I was reading, and one of the concepts he talked about, which does not appear in the text or the course itself, but he talks about people being inner fragile, you know, and that so resonated with me because, you know, you and I have talked about this before too. I kind of have these bouts of going back and forth about whether or not listening to the news. Because it can just end up being so depressing.
Right.
But, you know, thinking about that and thinking about the willingness of people to be really, really aggressive and attacking. And, you know, just trying to wrap, you know, my head or heart around that. And so when Ken is talking about inner fragility, that we feel vulnerable, that we all feel so fragile. It's like I really wanted to dive back into that. So I've been, you know, really reading that and going over that in the journey home, as, you know, as he's talking about the obstacles to peace. So, and Susan very nicely agreed that we could go through that today, that we could kind of talk about that. And yet, as I had said to Susan before, I was a little concerned because I thought, okay, if we start throwing the obstacles to peace, somehow that seems very complex. And yet it doesn't have to be. And these paragraphs that Ken was really pulling out of chapter 19 were really, really just, like I said, I just so resonated with these particular paragraphs. So it's chapter 19 that we're talking about, section 4, part A. The first obstacle, the desire to get rid of it, and it's paragraphs 7 through 9. So should we, do you want to say anything before we start reading this, Susan?
Well, I think just to put it in the context of when we say the desire to get rid of it, it's the desire to get rid of peace.
Yes.
So, you know, just the idea that, you know, most students would not be in touch with that, or most people would not be in touch with that idea. We think that we want to be peaceful. You know, we think that the world is causing us to lose our peace, that it's, that you're, you know, we have whatever the person or the situation seems to be that is, you know, kind of randomly arose and seemingly outside me, in front of me, in my face, is the reason that I can't be peaceful right now. And the Course takes a completely different view and says, no, it has, you know, there's, I mean, metaphysically, the Course is saying that there really isn't anything ultimately outside of us, but certainly in the condition we think we're in as bodies in this dream of, you know, exile from God, believing that we threw God's love away and had to flee into a world and then forgot that we made the whole thing up. In that condition, we are secretly, you know, wanting to have people and situations interfere with our peace so that we have a reason to get rid of this nagging guilt. We have something to blame it on instead of taking responsibility for, you know, it for ourselves, which is seems like the only two options that we have as personal selves who are unaware of ourselves as still a part of God, you know, who believe that we're separate from God and don't remember the beginning, the origin of that belief. So it's you know, the desire to get rid of it is the obstacles to peace are really looking at those dynamics of how it's really always my mind that's choosing to identify with this fragile body, this fragile personal self, emotionally and physically fragile, that seems to be at, you know, under constant attack by outside forces, including the news that we nonetheless want to ingest, right, that we still go to turn on, even though we know that it's going to be a painful experience for most of the time, right? So you know, Jesus is always trying to get us to see that this is something that we're choosing. It's my reaction to this imaginary stuff that's going on out there that's causing the pain. Not, it really has nothing to do with anything outside me. Nothing outside my mind, no one, no person, no situation really has the power to take my peace away. And so, you know, he's always trying to get us to see, look, this is something, you're giving it that power. It's only the power that you give it that is causing your pain. And so he's teaching us that we have another part of our mind that we can identify with, which is, you know, in the Course represented as Jesus, Holy Spirit, but it's just that memory of wholeness and love in our mind, the truth in us, you know, the all-inclusive love in us that is still connected with God and hasn't changed at all and includes everyone and everything, including the ones we love to blame for taking our peace away, right?
Yes.
So the desire to get rid of it as we go into this, he's just really, it's to our benefit ultimately to learn that we have a choice, because we also have a choice, you know, to learn that we're choosing not to be peaceful is really to our benefit, because that also is what opens us to the awareness that we can choose the part of our mind that is always peaceful, that remains peaceful, and is a lucid dreamer, knows we're dreaming, and knows that nothing outside us can really affect our peace, and that the love that supports, you know, that we share with God has never been changed in any way and is still there for us. So we're safe. We're not fragile.
Yes.
That's our safety.
But what we are addicts for stimulation. And that has become so obvious to me lately as an astrologer, because we really have all these planets in Gemini. And Gemini is this very dualistic energy. But, and in fact, somebody just said this to me, a Gemini said, you know, life is just too boring. I need something to go on. And I just laughed, because that's it. It's, I mean, in some ways we think, even though, you know, we would deny it, we think peace is boring.
Right.
You know, we live on such a diet of stimulation and conflict that
conflict,
seems so much more exciting to us.
Well, I think we're stimulated by conflict, right? We're stimulated by conflict. That's what that's what's not boring, is the duality that's always playing out, and that ego thought system of one or the other, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what causes conflict. It's it's me against the world. And actually, the way the ego would put it is, it's them, it's the world against me, right?
Right.
I'm always the victim of the world I see, and a part of us like it, you know. I mean, that idea that it's boring right there gives you a clue that you know we want it. I want this, and you know it's painful, but I still want it.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, and in fact, I had had this conversation with somebody. I don't remember if it was Bruce or somebody else at one point. And I had been rewatching reruns, or I hadn't been rewatching. I'd been watching for the first time, but reruns of the series Hawaii Five-0. And I was doing that because I actually never liked the series very much, because I really didn't think it was very well written. But, you know, with COVID, I didn't get to go to Hawaii, and that is something actually shot in Oahu. So I thought, I just need to be able to get this dose of Hawaii in my life. But I'll tell you what, that show actually has been a good Course in Miracles lesson for me, because it is extremely violent with these incredible villains that even I'm going, shoot him, kill him, get him, you know? And it's like, I'm like, whoa, you know, it's really bringing that out in me. But the one thing that really became so apparent is their themes of how they have villains who go through, like, you know, multiple seasons. And there's several times where they have the opportunity to get rid of the villain, whether it's a woman or a man. I say he, but a lot of times it's a woman. But the thing that I thought was interesting is they can't kill him because they need the conflict.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so if they kill a villain, then guess what? All of a sudden the villain has a wife or a brother.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was part of me that was just laughing about that, because most of us are not going to tune in and watch a show where there's a bank robber and you catch him and you put him in jail.
Right.
It's like there has to be some conflict. They have to get me to hate this guy. They have to, you know, build up this us against them, this duality, this black and white. That's what keeps most of us tuning in. And there was one day I was just laughing, because like I said, they had every opportunity. You know, it would have just been perfect to just shoot him and it's over. But they can't do that. That's not going to work.
Well, it's kind of like the Marvel Comics stuff, you know, that even, I mean, you can shoot them, but they rise from the dead, right?
Well, right.
They come to get us. And, you know, that, and we tell stories like that because, you know, that perpetuates the myth of the ego God that we made up.
Yes.
You know, we think that we attacked God, and because we took that preposterous idea seriously, you know, we were so terrified of retaliation that we made up a God that retaliates, you know, that is after us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just fled into this imaginary world where there's always in the back of our mind a God in, you know, in hot pursuit.
Right.
And so we see that kind of villain all around us, you know, and whether they're real villains or not, we'll make them into villains.
Yes, because we need them.
Yeah, we need them. And we partner up with villains, and, you know, and the people that we, you know, our special love relationships, we enter into trying to get our needs met and thinking that we have a really, you know, good bargain that we've made, that we can complement each other. And then it doesn't, you know, no one can really fill the void that we feel within, and it starts to break down. And so that becomes a villain. You know, now that person is a villain because they're withholding love, the love that I need from me. You know, so it's we spin out our days trying to get rid of peace, and it works, right?
Yes. Well, and there again, that translates to me directly into, you know, what I hear on the news. If we mm-hmm. don't have an external villain, then we need a villain within. We need somebody, you know, a senator, a congressman. We need somebody who is being the villain, somebody who is really being our target. And that's why, too, these particular paragraphs really kind of spoke to me because, yes. you know, as we read them, we'll say, like in the second one, it says, this feather of a wish, this tiny illusion, this microscopic remnant of the belief in sin is all that remains of what once seemed in the world. And it kind of talks about it floating around until it finally finds something that it right. can light on. And in some ways, we don't care what it is. We just need a villain. We need this little remnant, this little feather, this little sense of separation. We need it to go somewhere. Even if we're working really hard to understand or to heal that idea of separation, we still have this little floating remnant, this little wish, and we need it to light on something at, you know, for us to project our issues onto.
That's right. And first, you know, the Course is always telling us that we choose the ego first. You know, it is my choice to identify with guilt. I don't remember that choice. But as soon as I have made that choice to identify with guilt, as soon as that guilt, you know, starts to kind of rise again in my mind, then it lights on something, right? I project it outward, and I experience it as an incoming attack from the outside. But I've completely forgotten the choice to project it outward. Mm-hmm. So that's where it lands. You know, it lands on. It really doesn't matter, Sia. You're right. I mean. You know, whatever, anyone is a suitable target.
Yes.
We have our favorites, for sure. Yeah. And each seeming fragment of the decision-making mind, each, you know, seeming personal self has their own little, you know, portion of the of this crazy dream of separation in which they have favorite targets. But honestly, you know, we can, you know, if someone cuts us off in traffic or, you know, cuts us off in line at the supermarket, or, you know, a minor twin is mowing their lawnmower when we're trying to listen to something that's important to us. I mean, those kinds of things can drive us into a rage too.
Yes, absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So should we read a couple of these paragraphs?
Yeah, let's do it. It's great material.
Okay, so this I think is paragraph 7, at least I hope I've got it right. Okay, the little insane wish to get rid of him whom you invited in and pushed him out must produce conflict. As you look upon the world, this little wish, uprooted and floating aimlessly, can land and settle briefly upon anything, for it has no purpose now. Before the Holy Spirit entered to abide with you, it seemed to have a mighty purpose. The fixed and unchangeable dedication to sin and its results. Now it is aimless, wandering pointlessly, causing no more than tiny interruptions in love's appeal. Well, and, you know, can't you just see it? This little thing, and it's just, you know, we're like, hey, I'm such a good student of A Course in Miracles. I'm doing so great here. I invited Jesus into my life. I'm holding Jesus's hand. But I've got this little tiny thing just floating around, just looking for somebody to hate, you know, looking for somebody to cause me a little issue.
And it's that guilt over that little wish, you know, that's floating around is guilt.
Right.
And it's just, you know, again, it's our desire to get rid of it. You know, we desire to get rid of peace because we desire to get rid of guilt.
Yes.
Right? And so, you know, because we believe we did get rid of peace in the beginning when we threw God's love away, then, you know, we feel this tremendous guilt about it. And we're trying to project, you know, get rid of that too. Because we want to always position ourselves as the less guilty one.
Yes.
So it has to land outside of us. You know, we've got it. That's the only way that we think it's going to make us feel better, but it really doesn't. It just nourishes the guilt within. You know, Ken called it a maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem.
Right.
Separation didn't happen, you know, and yet we keep defending ourselves against it. And as you were saying at the beginning, the that inner fragility comes from my awareness, you know, my very dim awareness, because I've made it very unconscious, but that something's very wrong with me. You know, something, I don't deserve love. I don't deserve, you know, I'm bad somehow. I mean, we all have that sort of nagging awareness that you know, something's real wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is that inner fragility. You know, the only way I can make myself feel better, once we've chosen the ego tells us, you know, is to compare myself with someone who's guiltier than I am. So we need our villains.
Yes. Well, and in fact, when Ken was talking about this in The Journey Home, he was actually mentioning Hitler. Mm. And, you know, maybe that's why somehow it resonated with me, because, of course, we want to build him into a super bad guy.
Right.
But, you know, he's just talking, we feel fragile. We feel
yes.
vulnerable. We
right.
feel like at any moment our whole delusional system can fall apart, which, of course, it can.
It can.
So
it has
what?
Yeah.
So what do? We build up, in a sense, these paranoid delusions, or we build this whole psychological profile that is going to now protect us. And if we can attack all these people who don't fit the mold that we want them to, then somehow that's going to hold us together. Now, and that's another thing, too, that I guess so resonated is, you know, in that section, he really was talking about the psychological, delusional, paranoid system and saying, you know what? That isn't just for special people. It's all of us.
Absolutely.
You know, it's all of us to one extent or another, because, like, even on a level of being obsessive or controlling, we think if we can control the outside, then nobody's going to know what's going on in inside, or rather, even if it's not that somebody just knows, but rather, if we can control the outside, if we can make it perfect, wear the right clothes, have our hair look a certain way, have
right.
everything fall into place, then somehow the inside isn't going to feel so chaotic.
Right.
And
right.
it doesn't work.
you no. know? No, it doesn't. In fact, it just makes us feel emptier and more fragile.
Right.
Because the constant, you know, people don't defend themselves and attack, retaliate, if they don't believe that they've already been attacked, you know, if they
right.
don't already feel extremely vulnerable. And I think that's, you know, remembering that is really so helpful, that I love the idea that the Course puts forth, that it's always my call for love.
Yes.
You know, that we really have to focus on. It may appear to be in someone else, that someone else is really, you know, being the attacking one, and the, you know, is the one that is, you know, unbalanced and psychologically obsessive or controlling. But it's my reaction to it. You know, if I'm reacting to it with anything but love, then it's my call for love.
Right.
So you know, that is really, if we can really, the whole Course is skewed toward ultimately getting us to see that we're the same, that the need of every heart, mine and yours, no matter, you know, including the worst villain that we see out there, is to forgive ourselves and find our way home.
Yes. Right? Shared interests.
Shared interest in healing our mind. Shared interest in, you know, learning, finding a better way, learning that we're not the home of evil, darkness, and sin. And everybody projects it out there. Everybody, you know, it really matters not. There's no hierarchy of illusions in the Course's teaching. And so, you know, it may seem that some people are acting out in more, you know, more terrifying and catastrophic ways, but that has no real, you know, real significance. You know, the minor twinge of annoyance hides the same thought of murder, and we all have it.
Yes.
When we've identified with bodies and a psychological self that's, you know, that's based on an idea of sin, guilt, and fear, we're going to be unbalanced, you know, really homicidal maniacs.
Right.
At least within our minds, right?
Yes.
You know, I mean, some of the thoughts that we have about other people, I mean, maybe we don't act it out physically, but boy, we act it out, you know, mentally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important to see that within yourself and to see that, you know, that cry, this is my cry for love. They have the same cry for love that I do.
Yes. Well, and you know, going back to the Hawaii Five-O thing, I can't believe how many times I'm saying to myself, that isn't fair. That isn't fair. You know, this criminal, he's not doing it fair, as if there's some kind of fairness and there's rules to being the bad guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, well, but what it is, yeah, it's resonating in my own heart. Why isn't life fair?
Don't you remember being a child? I mean, isn't that the chant of every, you know, 3 and 4 and 5 year old?
Yes.
It's not fair, you know, who has siblings and just mm-hmm. saying, you know, it's not fair. You know, you, why do you let him get away with it? And you, you know, punish me. And, you know, that's, I mean, that's exactly really, again, what we're really saying to God, you know, it's not fair that you're, you, that you've condemned me to this world. Well, God doesn't have anything to do with this. This is all happening in our imagination, you know?
Yes.
The original authority problem was my belief that I could make a better world or a better self, that I'd have something, that there was something in it for me to run away from home, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I made up, which of course didn't happen, but I believed it did. And then I made up a whole defensive structure and a whole world in which to act it out and imagine God as recognizing it. And you know, constantly coming after me to punish me and make me the guilty one.
Yes.
Should be my brother that's guilty, right?
Mm-hmm.
What about him? It isn't fair.
Yeah. Well, in fact, I it's so fun in some ways to step back and just watch my own reactions to things. Sometimes not so much. But one of the things that has, you know, because I've been in the process of selling a house and buying a house, and in selling the house, I agreed to a number of fixes that were pretty substantial. So I was dealing with lots and lots of different people on that level, getting estimates for this, getting estimates for that. And then the home that I bought also required quite a bit of work. And I mean, like, quite a bit of work. Mm. So once again, just so many contractors, so many people doing different things. And one of the things I noticed, this happened with two different men, one in Denver and now one where I'm living in Nevada. And I just think it's funny. I mean, there's got to be some resonance here that I need to think about. And that is that they were both doing work for me that required quite a bit of money, and I would call them or I would try to get, you know, the invoice, or I would try to get, you know, an agreement about exactly what the scope of work was going to be, and they weren't emailing or they weren't returning calls. And so in the case in Denver, I finally just said, look, you know, if we're going to do this, I need this from you, and if nothing else, I need a call back, so just let me know. Mm-hmm. Well, when he calls me back, he says, is this trouble? And all I could think of, like, was, okay, you're not returning calls and I'm the one who's creating trouble? I mean, because he had been pretty resistant. I mean, I recognize part of it was he was a contractor and he really didn't think I should be questioning him. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's what was really going on.
Right.
And so when he said that to me the second time, I said, are you looking in a mirror? Because I was like, I, you know, you're trying to put me in my place and you think I'm just going to fork over all this money without asking you for details. I didn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like I was trouble because I was questioning. But then sure enough, so, and there was a part of me, I said, okay, thank God, I'm never going to have to deal with him again. Because I really didn't want to ever deal with him again. And I get out here and I get into a situation where there's somebody also doing some work and he's just not returning my calls. You know, he's not providing mm-hmm. me information. Mm-hmm. He's not telling me when the guys will show up, what they're going to do, or what the schedule is. And so finally, after several calls he wasn't returning, I said, look, it's okay if you can't do this work. I understand that. That's not an issue, but I do need to know. Because
right.
if you can't, somebody else needs to. So just let me know, you know, and, mm-hmm. and let me know by the end of the day. Because now it's been a couple weeks, you know.
Right.
So he calls, he actually shows up at the house and says, are you trouble? And I was like, I mean, Susan, I was just kind of flabbergasted. Like, once again, because I want a callback or an answer, I'm trouble.
Well, it's so perfect, isn't it? You know, that, yeah, I mean, to feel unfairly treated.
Well, exactly. But I was just like, what is this? You know?
Right.
I mean, that right. I'm trouble. I'm the one who's trouble.
Right. Well, and of course that, you know, that gets to our idea again of the guilt is in me. And it's like, that's, you know, I mean, the truth is that if we're in our right minds, I mean, I think almost anybody would react to that, right? It's just, it's, you know, that's infuriating as in a position like that. And especially I think as women, because it's kind of a typical situation you can get into with those kinds of roles, I think.
Right.
But you know, I mean, the truth is that if we were completely in our right minds, it really wouldn't bother us. We'd just, you know, go and do, like, maybe we tell him, okay, this isn't going to work out, or you know, but we wouldn't take it personally. We would just sort of laugh it off. You know?
Right. Well, and it's funny because he did actually show up again yesterday because his worker didn't come. Didn't show up.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of sitting here going, okay, what am I going to do now? Do I call him? Do I just let it go for the end of the day and see what
right.
happens? Well, all of a sudden the boss shows up. You know?
Right.
And I'm
right.
like, hello, you know, and he goes, yeah. I think he even said, you're trouble, right? You know, and I just kind of smiled because actually I was delighted that he came because I thought they were just going to blow me off is what I thought was going to happen.
Right, right.
So
yeah.
Anyway, so then I'm trying to just be chatty and just trying to be, you know, whatever. But he said something that's a little aggressive. And I said, when is your birthday? And he said, April Fool's, which is Aries, one of the most aggressive signs out there, right? I said, how did I not know that? And so I told him, I'm an astrologer. I got your number, honey. You know,
that's
and,
great.
And he
yeah.
just laughed and he goes, are you an Aries? I said, no, I'm not. I said, but I said, I've had three planets in Aries. So sweetheart, I'm a match. I'm a match to your fire. So watch out, you know, and then he's just laughing, you know.
That is very funny.
But really, I thought, okay, boy, what is the lesson here that I just am, you know, maybe I am projecting too much aggressiveness or something, but it's funny. And so there again, life, if you're willing to have a sense of humor, which I don't always have, Susan.
Right, we don't always have
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but sometimes I really can just go, okay, why do I need to have an enemy?
Right.
You know, why do I need to have enemies? What is that about?
From the course's perspective, it's, you know, every lesson is the same, right?
You
know, the problem has nothing to do with the specifics of what's going on. It always, you know, is reflecting what that war within myself that's going on in the mind, right? And my choice for the ego and wanting to reinforce that sense of guilt in someone else and make it, you know, about one or the other, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of us will be in control, and I want it to be me.
Right.
You know? How dare you, right?
Yeah, it better be me, Susan.
It better be me. You know, I'm the one who's paying for this and all of that. So you know, again, it's what purpose we were giving it, and as in that paragraph that we just read, you know, about it. That little wish floating aimlessly can land and settle briefly upon anything where it has no purpose now. Well, that's, you know, that's very optimistic of Jesus. I mean, it has no purpose now except the purpose that we're still giving it. And the purpose that we're usually giving it is to reinforce that guilt within the mind and, you know, but only to make it in them and not me, right? To keep
mm-hmm.
that idea of one or the other going.
Yes.
And you know, in a situation like that, where, you know, again, it's reflecting what we feel, you know, that authority problem that we have with God, you know, and God is not recognizing me. God is not respecting me.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
God is calling me trouble.
Yes.
And how dare he? How dare my father say that to me, you know, because that's who we're all like sort of acting out with. You know?
Yes.
I mean, same thing with the guy that's doing it, you know, on some level, he's doing the same thing. So
mm-hmm.
he has to make you the bad guy. He's, you know, he knows he hasn't given you the service that you need, right?
Yes.
You back. He feels guilty, so he's got to turn it around and make you the guilty one.
Yeah, and I'm trouble.
That's what we do as we go through our days, and so, you know, this section is trying to just get us to look at really, that how insubstantial this really is, and yet the tremendous, extraordinary weight we give it, you know?
Yes. Well, in fact,
a feather.
Should we read the other two paragraphs? Let's do it.
The next one.
Sure.
This feather of a wish, you know, that's very light, right? This tiny illusion, this microscopic remnant of the belief in sin, is all that remains, is all that really remains of what once seemed to be the world. It is no longer an unrelenting barrier to peace, because we know how to question it now, right? We should be questioning it. Its pointless wandering makes its results appear to be more erratic and unpredictable than before, right? It seems even, you know, how can I see that in this situation? Yet, what could be more unstable than a tightly organized delusional system?
Yes.
All of it's delusional.
Right. And we change the rules all the time.
Right. It's seeming stability. You know, those moments in between our ego hissy fits, you know, may seem like we have now and then stability, is its pervasive weakness, which extends to everything. The variability the little remnant induces merely indicates its limited results.
Yeah. So and now, go ahead.
It really just doesn't have the power, right?
No, it doesn't.
It seems to. It seems to topple our peace, and we point to it, and we cling to it, and we tell others about it, and we get ourselves dig ourselves into terrible conflicted holes over these things, but you know, some much bigger than that, right? And some much more minor than that.
Right.
But well, it's all the same.
Yep. And in the last paragraph, it says, how mighty can a little feather be before the great wings of truth? Can it oppose an eagle's flight or hinder the advance of summer? Can it interfere with the effects of summer's sun upon a garden covered by the snow? See but how easily this little wisp is lifted up and carried away, never to return, and part with it in gladness, not regret, for it is nothing in itself and stood for nothing when you had greater faith in its protection. Would you not rather greet the summer sun than fix your gaze upon a disappearing snowflake and shiver in remembrance of the winter's cold?
Well, and the answer is maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe this isn't worth it.
But also, you know, I mean, maybe I would rather shiver, right? A lot of the time we just really don't, you know, we don't see the connection, right?
Right, because somehow it makes me feel alive to have conflict. It makes me feel alive to have a story to tell you about how these guys are mistreating me.
Right. It preserves the idea of me. And that's, you know, we still, even though that idea terrifies us, you know, the belief that that really happened, there's still a part of us that thinks that maybe we can somehow make this experiment in individuality work. It hasn't worked so far, but, you know, we haven't tried everything.
That's right. We haven't tried everything yet. Oh, my
gosh. But, you know, at some point it just becomes, oh, you know, we begin to see the sameness of it. And it really, we really do begin to see that all of it is just exhausting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it really just, I mean, the conflict and anxiety that we go through, you know, there has to be a better way. We come to that idea that brings us to the spiritual journey in the first place again and again until we're finally ready to say, you know, I mean, at some point, I think there's a tipping point where you just say, you know, I just really can't do this anymore.
Right.
And then it does really generalize, and we just, you know, we the fight is gone, but we're not there yet. So, mm-hmm. you know, our mind is still split. So in the interim, you know, the way we work with it is to just kind of, you know, kind of catch ourselves again and again. Okay, that the real reason that I'm reacting to this isn't because he's calling me trouble, you know, which is insulting to a personal self, really insulting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's really not what's going on here, you know. This is about, you know, which teacher within me, which purpose within me I'm identifying with. And there's only two. There's the purpose of, you know, there's the ego or Jesus, Holy Spirit. There's the ego that is, oh, my choice for the ego is always a choice to root myself more deeply in the dream of being under attack by others, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my, you know, my choice for Jesus, Holy Spirit is always a choice to heal and to take another, however small, incremental step toward awakening. You know,
yeah.
Which requires, though, that choice requires, though, that I be wrong.
Yes,
that's what's hard for us. It's hard, you know, because there still is so much fear of punishment there, and we're still terrified that if we admit that there's no guilt in them, that the guilt lands back on me, that wish turns right around, the little torpedo now.
Yes,
and comes
yes.
right back at me.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, Susan, this has been a wonderful discussion as usual. I'm so glad that we found some time to get together. But we just have a few minutes to close the show out today. So do you have anything that you would like to announce? Anything? We talked about your discussion group, but is there anything else going on that you'd like people to know about?
No, not right now. I mean, I am hoping maybe in the fall I'll do some workshops. I did have two. We haven't talked in a long time, so I might give a little plug for two different interviews that I posted on my website in the last couple months, like 2 months.
Okay.
One is with Rosemary Lasasso, who is, you know, she was a long, long time teacher at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles and retired a couple of years ago when they moved. But I'm still in touch with her. She's a wonderful teacher and mentor. And I did an interview with her, I think in April, and that is on my my website. And then I did an interview just a couple weeks ago with Jeff Siebert, who is still teaching at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, another wonderful teacher and mentor. And both of them really were, you know, very practical questions about trying to live the course. And you know, we were really looking at what we'd all been through with the pandemic and the politics and the everything, the tumultuous trouble that we've
yes.
all seem to have been in over the last year and a half. So I think I hope students will find them very relevant. I did, and it was very helpful to
okay.
me. And, yeah.
Great. Well, thank you for bringing our attention to those. And her website is www.forays.inforgiveness, that's all one word, .com. So forays is forays, inforgiveness.com. And I will also post it in the chat room. So yeah, go find Susan's website and find those. I know I'm going to. I want to go listen to those. So thank you very much for doing those interviews and for putting those on your website. So anything else before we go?
No, just a clarification that they are written.
They're written. Okay, so it's something to read,
yeah.
not to listen to.
Yes, but you will see them if you go to my website. You'll see them on the homepage. To the left, they're as posts, as blog posts, and they're right there. And there's
okay.
interviews. If you're not familiar with the many interviews with the people at the foundation and with Ken Wapnick that are on my site, then that's an entryway that you could go back and look at all of those as well.
Okay, great. And also there again, encouragement to everybody to go to the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, www.facim.org. And I want to thank everybody for listening and joining us today. It's always great to just have this space and to know that you're out there too, or, you know, pandemic or not, we're all just kind of sharing this space. So thank you so much for doing that. And I want to thank Susan Dugan for being here today, especially. It's just always wonderful. Hopefully we'll be back on track and maybe get together about once a month to, you know, to do this show together. So thank you, Susan.
Thank you. It's always my pleasure.
Okay. And you have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, also known as Trouble, and my guest, Susan Dugan, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we think about life and spirituality.